Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Friday, May 24th. I'm Lisa Music reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Oakland woman found safe after missing for 3 days. Kinetic sculptures race towards glory. And the KMA News Sports Report. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. KMUD's Matt LaFever brings the latest headlines from Mendocino County, where an Oakland woman was found after being lost for 3 days on the Mendocino County coast. A rural town now has access to high-speed internet, and a new tax could provide safer fire evacuation routes for brick jails.
This is Matt LaFever with the headlines out of Mendocino County for Friday, May 24th, 2024. Let's turn to the Mendocino County coast, where a dramatic rescue unfolded north of Fort Bragg this week as search and rescue volunteers successfully located missing person Elizabeth Shank. Shank had been missing for nearly 3 days in a heavily wooded area. She was last seen around 9 a.m. on Tuesday, May 21st, and was found around 4 p.m. on Thursday, May 23rd. Shank's ordeal began on Tuesday morning when she went missing in a rugged and densely forested area. The search effort was extensive, involving multiple agencies and volunteers who worked tirelessly around the clock. The challenging terrain, characterized by steep topography and overgrown vegetation, significantly hampered the search. The Mendocino County Sheriff's Office, along with numerous search and rescue organizations, launched an immediate search. Efforts intensified as the days passed, with additional resources requested through the California Governor's Office of Emergency Services. By Thursday, 73 search and rescue volunteers, 7 certified canines, and unmanned aerial vehicles were deployed to scour the area. Yesterday, in the mid-afternoon, searchers found a clothing item they believed belonged to Shank. They quickly concentrated their efforts in that vicinity, ultimately locating her about 200 yards from where that garment had been located. Shank was then transported to the incident command post on Brule Point Road, where medical personnel were on standby. She was then taken to Adventist Health Mendocino Coast Hospital for precautionary testing and evaluation. Shank was reported to be in stable condition, in good spirits, and suffered only minor scratches and abrasions. Shank's family, present during the search, was reunited with her at the command post. The successful rescue was a testament to the dedication and collaboration of volunteers and first responders from numerous Northern California counties. The Mendocino County Sheriff's Office expressed gratitude to the many organizations involved in the rescue, including various search and rescue teams, CAL FIRE, the California National Guard, and local businesses like Harvest Market and Fort Bragg for their support. Now let's turn to Comanche, California in Mendocino County, where a significant move to bridge the digital divide has occurred. AT&T has expanded its fiber internet service to Comanche. This expansion brings high-speed internet to more than 250 new residential and small business locations in this rural area. This project is part of a larger initiative approved by the California Public Utilities Commission, which sees AT&T investing over $6.2 million in fiber builds across several California communities, including Petaluma, Sonoma, Dixon, Truckee, and Fair Oaks. This latest expansion in Comanche marks a crucial step in connecting rural areas with super-fast internet. Residents and businesses in Comanche can now access AT&T Fiber's high-speed internet, which promises to enhance connectivity for both personal and professional use. Interested customers can learn more about the service at fiber.att.com. AT&T has committed to helping rural Californians close the digital divide and connect people wherever they live and work. The expansion in Comanche is a testament to ongoing efforts to provide internet to underserved communities. To celebrate this expansion, the AT&T Fiber sales team is hosting a sign-up event this weekend in Comanche in collaboration with the Comanche Broadband Committee and a local church. The event will feature a barbecue with free snacks, hot dogs, and same-day installation for new customers. Now let's turn to Brook Trails. In a move to enhance community emergency infrastructure, the Board of Supervisors unanimously passed the Sherwood Corridor Special Benefit Assessment on May 21st.
This marks a crucial step for the communities of Brook Trails, Sylvandale, Spring Creek, and the Gates in Mendocino County. The Sherwood Corridor's Special Benefits Assessment is an annual property assessment designed to fund repairs and maintenance of two vital emergency access routes. These routes are crucial for ensuring safe evacuations and providing access for first responders during emergencies, particularly in the high-risk fire areas of the Sherwood Corridor. Mendocino County's 3rd District Supervisor John Hashek is quoted saying, quote, "Our community safety is of the utmost importance to the board. This resolution has been a long time in the making, and I am very excited we have found a path forward. It paves the way for improvements to much-needed emergency access routes, increasing our community's safety during a wildfire event," unquote. With the board's approval, the next step is for property owners within the designated benefit boundary to vote on the assessment. Ballots will be mailed by June 7th and must be returned by July 23rd, the date of the public hearing. If approved, the special assessment will appear on the tax roll starting in the fiscal year 2024 to 2025. The proposed assessment term is set for 20 years with rates of $30.88 per developed parcel and $1.39 per undeveloped parcel, subject to annual CPI increases. The community is invited to a public presentation on May 28th at 7 p.m. at the Brook Trails Township Community Service District's Board of Directors meeting. Supervisor John Hashek, the engineering firm Bartell Wells, and county staff will be available to answer questions. And that's the latest from Mendocino County. This is Matt LaFever from Hopland, reporting for KMUD News.
The Soham Fire Safe Council celebrated a panel of neighborhoods, fire safe councils, and firewise communities on April 27th. Serenity Wood reports.
The Southern Humboldt Fire Safe Council hosted their Fire Resources Fair at the Mateel Community Center on April 27th for the second year in a row. Last year, the event was initiated by the Humboldt County Fire Safe Council through a CAL FIRE grant that provided funding for education and outreach. While last year's event was co-produced by the Southern Humboldt Fire Safe Council and Humboldt County Fire Safe Council, this year's event was produced by Southern Humboldt Fire Safe Council solely. The first presentation highlighted 8 of our neighborhood fire safe councils and firewise communities, local groups organized to foster fire resiliency and preparedness in each of their necks of the woods.
The movers and the shakers of our community are in this room right now.
It's just amazing the power and the creativity that rises here. There's a lot of great work being done in this community, and there's power in that. And this panel represents that power. And we enjoy supporting and helping in various ways these great organizations.
Southern Humboldt Fire Safe Council Chair Gail Eastwood introduced the first panel, which consisted of Christina Huff with Garberville Firewise, Craig Johnson with Bembo Firewise, Chief Nick Pape with Shelter Cove Firewise, Christopher Larson with Whale Gulch Fire Safe Council, Anna Rogers with Whitethorn Fire Safe Council, Som Kimley with the Harris Fire Safe Council, Tanner Spees with Ettersburg Fire Safe Council, and Kathy Weber with Crooked Prairie Fire Safe Council. Carianna Reynolds moderated this panel. Tune in to KMUD News Monday, May 26th for KMUD's full coverage of the event.
The more organized we get as a Southern Humboldt community and all these small groups, the more the funding is going to come so we can realize our dreams here. So I'm Carianna Reynolds. I'll be the moderator today. We're going to start with this first answer. We're going to ask, what issue or event led to the formation of your group? What was the spark?
I'm Christina Huff with Garberville Firewise. It was the summer of 2020, the August complex, thinking about how vulnerable Garberville is and how like it is to paradise.
Good afternoon. I'm Craig Johnson. My wife and I have a homestead up in the Benbow area. Heather Burke and Anna Edwards and Burgers, they started pulling together some community members to talk about how to organize to become more resilient over time. Some of their concerns were their age and being able to like get trees out of the way and access and egress. You know, the fear of the Paradise Fire happening again was really resonating with everyone, and that was a call to action, I guess. Moving forward, we became Firewise in a minute.
I'm Fire Chief Nick Pape with Shelter Cove Fire, Shelter Cove Firewise. Our Firewise program really started 2013, 2014. We had many fires impact Shelter Cove and a large fire threat out there. We're at the end of a very long, narrow, windy, pothole-filled road, and we have 4,000 lots, and there's a lot of vacant property owners, and there wasn't a solution to that, so we decided to be more proactive instead of reactive.
I'm Christopher Larson from Whale Gulch, and been out there about 40 years, and we're neighbors of Shelter Cove, but we're quite a different situation. And a real catalyst for us to become a Firewise community was probably losing Nancy Peregrine, who was this incredible energy behind our fire department and our community, and did the job of six other people. And without her, we suddenly realized it was kind of a need for somebody to support our volunteer fire company.
Our council was started by our fire department's assistant chief, Kent Griggs-Miller, 4 years ago when there was a lot of fire activity, going out of town, coming back for the fire activity, and realizing that communications were just kind of in disarray, and really felt like there needed to be some people to address that really hyper-locally. So that was Kent's goal, was how to create a plan locally for communications and emergency response.
Hello, my name is Tanner Spees. I am with the Edersburg Fire Safe Council. We started through a series of community emergency response planning meetings with the Telegraph Ridge Fire Protection District and Fire Department, which Edersburg is inside. And through those meetings, we identified some goals. And one of the ideas of how to try to work to accomplish those goals was to create a fire safe council.
I'm Kathy Weber, and I'm with the Crooked Prairie Fire Safe Council, which is out in the Edersburg area. And I have lived there for 40 years. And in those 40 years, we've had our share of fires. We all got older. The insurance got more expensive. We had to disband. So out of that is how our Fire Safe Council came to be. We also formed a NEST, Neighborhood Emergency Service Team, back in 1999, partly in response to the Y2K threat, which thankfully did not happen.
I'm Sam Kimley. I'm with the Harris Fire Safe Council. A few summers ago, the August complex came through. I think that was really the catalyst for us to form. It was just across the river from our area. Had it crossed the river, many people would have lost their homes and their livelihoods. I'd say we're very grassroots.
So the next question we're going to ask all our panelists here is, how are you addressing these concerns? What projects are you working on? In 2.5 minutes, good luck.
Garberville Firewise is very focused on education. We have a 7-point action plan.
You know, first we became Firewise. Then we organized to annex the southern Humboldt area south of Garberville and through Sprawl Creek into the Garberville Fire Department. So that was a huge, huge milestone.
How do we involve our community? Our Shelter Cove Firewise is a fire department sponsored program through the Resort Improvement District, which is the special district in Shelter Cove. So year one was that main assessment. What can we do now? Year two was, all right, we found out that fire is a threat and our evacuation routes are not sustainable with life. If we did have a large event in Shelter Cove, it's going to be really hard to get people out. So then what do we do for notification? So we invested in one of the first emergency notification siren systems. So we have six sirens strategically placed that can either do tsunami or wildfire hazard alerts, which hopefully wake people up and notify them. And we built up our fire department. We passed a fire tax similar to what Garberville did recently, which quadrupled our fire department funding, which gave us more resources to put towards being proactive. Now we're in the next phases of getting fuels reduction grant money.
Whitethorn Fire Safes Council, our main task has been gathering information for a while now. We're a very isolated community, even from each other sometimes. So we've been working on gathering information. We divided the district into 14 nests. Each nest has a leader, and that leader has been working on gathering information about everybody who lives in their nest. Do they have a gate that we might need to cut through to reach them? you know, what needs do they have? Do they have someone who might need to use a wheelchair or something like that in case of an evacuation?
We pursued a California Fire Safe Council capacity building grant, which we received. That allowed us to really dig into some of the projects. Part of that grant was the development of two shovel-ready projects. So we decided as a priority to focus on defensible space, and our second project was a prescribed fire. So, worked on a California Fire Safe Council defensible space grant, which we received. We were a part of the coordination of that development with Hubbell County Public Works and implementing partner Bryceland Volunteer Fire Department. So this project's it's a major accomplishment for our area, I think. We're very close to kicking it off. In fact, we are signing up applicants now. The prescribed fire that we're planning, we are hoping to implement this fall, and that's going to be to create defensible space around the Edersburg Fire Station.
You only need 8 households to be a recognized FireWise community, which has a lot of benefit in terms of both organizing your action plan and having a hookup with a national organization that's gonna be watching, are you doing your action plan? It also has some fire insurance benefit, which is a concern for a lot of people.
Tune into the news on Monday, May 26th to catch the rest of the panel. For KMUD News, I'm Serenity Wood.
Now we turn to Ray Hamill for the weekly KMUD News Sports Report.
1 year after they were unable to field a team, the South Fork Cubs are North Coast Section champions in softball once again. Hello and welcome to this week's KMUD News Sports Report. I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com. We'll take a more in-depth look at the Cubs' big achievement in just a moment, and we'll also be looking at all of the other big local sports stories of the week, including how the South Fork boys fared in the NCS baseball playoffs, as well as how all the other HDNL teams did this week. Some good news for College of the Redwoods sports, news of 3 local high school athletes who have qualified for the state track and field championships, and some Humboldt Crabs updates as we get set for the summer season. But first up, the South Fork girls have established themselves as one of the top softball programs in the entire NCS over the past few years. After not even fielding a team last spring, the Cubs returned with a bang in 2024 as the school continues an impressive year in NCS sports. In the fall, the South Fork football team won its first ever NCS championship, and the boys' basketball team followed that by reaching a section championship game for the first time since 1990 this past winter. Not to be outdone, the South Fork girls won a Division 6 section championship in softball last weekend with a comfortable 12-1 win over California School for the Deaf in 6 innings. Remarkably, the NCS title is the team's 3rd in their last 4 full seasons, following the championships they won in 2018 and 2019, before COVID-shortened seasons of 2020 and 2021, during which there was no NCS playoffs. All 3 of the school's championship teams have one thing in common, namely head coach Lisa Todd, who returned to the fold this year after 2 years away from the team, and she had an immediate impact. And the Cubs are not done yet. After clinching the NCS championship, the South Fork girls have now qualified for next week's NorCal State playoffs for the first time in school history. The coaches and players were unaware state qualification was even on the line when they played in the NCS championship game, and they were pleasantly surprised to find out after the game that they would advance. The state playoffs began in 2022, and South Fork becomes the 5th HDNL school to qualify, following the Hoopa, McKinleyville, and Eureka girls, who all qualified in 2022, and the Del Norte girls, who qualified last year. The Cubs will find out their seed and bracket on Sunday, as well as who they will face in the opening round. The action gets underway on Tuesday, and if they receive a favorable seed, the South Fork girls could get the opportunity to host at least 1 and perhaps 2 or 3 more games. The South Fork boys, unfortunately, did not fare quite so well in their NCS run. After winning their opening game against Victory Christian Academy by a score of 11-1, the Cubs lost their semi-final game last weekend, barely falling to Point Arena by a score of 3-2. That sent the Pirates on to this week's Division 6 Championship game, where they fell 17-5 to the Wildcats in Ferndale. 1 year after losing an NCS Championship game to St. Bernard's, this time around a motivated Ferndale team made sure it would not walk away empty-handed and dominated the Pirates in the final. The Cats actually trailed 1-0 after the top of the first and 3-1 heading into the bottom of the second, but they would quickly pull away with 6 runs in the bottom half of the inning and 7 more in the third. The section championship is the second this year for 12 of the 15 Ferndale players who also played on the Wildcats' NCS winning football team, which would go on to win the school's first ever state championship in the sport a few weeks later. 4 other HDNL teams were also involved in the NCS baseball and softball playoffs this week. In Division 4 baseball, the McKinleyville Panthers saw a memorable season end when they lost their semi-final at Piedmont by a score of 4-1 on Wednesday night. The Panthers enjoyed an historic spring that saw them claim a Big 5 championship and the school's first ever HDNL Charles Lakin tournament title. As the number 3 seeds in their NCS bracket, the Panthers opened the playoffs with a dominating 10-0 win over St. Helena on Saturday, but they were unable to carry that momentum into Wednesday's semi-final. The St. Bernards and Del Norte girls both enjoyed better success in the softball playoffs. The Crusaders posted their third straight playoff win on Tuesday, beating Lower Lake 4-0 in the Division 5 semi-finals to set up a weekend championship game against Berean Christian in Concord. The Del Norte girls also won their Division 4 semi-final, and they did so in thrilling fashion, securing a 4-3 come-from-behind win over Salesian on Wednesday, thanks to a 2-run walk-off home run by junior Tacente Steinruck. The Warriors, who are seeded number 2 in their bracket, will play number 1 seed St. Helena in the championship game on Friday night, after the Saints defeated Fortuna 3-1 in their semi-final on Tuesday. In other local sports news this week, College of the Redwoods recently held a groundbreaking ceremony for a new all-weather sports field, which the school hopes to have up and running this fall. The Corsairs are planning on playing some soccer games on the new field as early as October and hope to play their home football games on it next year. In the meantime, they will continue to play their home football games at the Redwood Bowl this fall, but they plan on using the new on-campus field to practice on. College of the Redwoods also recently announced a partnership with Bear River Casino Resort and will begin playing their baseball games on a new all-weather field there in the near future, while also continuing to host all of their softball games at the Bear River Sports Complex. In local high school track and field, meanwhile, 3 HDNL athletes have qualified for this weekend's big state championships after strong showings at last week's NCS Meet of Champions. St. Bernard's Leila Florvillis and Fortuna's Russell Pascasio both won their events at the MOC, with Florvillis taking first in the girls' 100-meter hurdles and Pascasio placing first in the boys' high jump. St. Bernard's Madeline Shanahan also qualified for the state meet after placing second in the girls' discus. And finally this week, the Humboldt Crabs will begin their new season next Friday when they host Seals Baseball in their season opener. And that's always a good sign that summer has arrived here on the North Coast. And that's this week's KMOD News Sports Report. Until next time, I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com.
This Saturday at noon, the Triathlon of the Art World will commence at the Arcata Plaza in a 3-day race of people-powered machines headed toward the finish line in Ferndale. We turn to a Grand Kinetic Sculpture race representative with a long history in this unique and thrilling event.
My name is Jennifer Thielander. I am a board member and I run several committees for Kinetic Universe, including the Development Committee and the Outreach Committee. I do all the fundraising. And I'm also 2010 Rutabaga Queen Dynamite. And the Kinetic Sculpture Race, or the Kinetic Grand Championship, is it's a really exciting thing that was born in Humboldt County in 1969. It started in Ferndale. It has now morphed into a 3-day race from Arcata to Ferndale over, like I said, 3 days. It is a showcase of art, pageantry, and engineering. They build these giant kinetic sculptures that are run on people power only.
Though these artistic people-powered machines may look like they're all about show, the machines must cross a vast area of Humboldt County, encountering obstacles along the way.
Going over land, sand, and water. So another really interesting thing about the race is they have to have everything on them to be able to navigate through these different obstacles.
Jennifer said there were over 40 entrants in this year's race, including some youth that have caught the kinetic bug.
We've got three youth teams this year. This very cool thing's been happening lately where kinetic clubs are popping up at the schools. So Mack High and Arcata High both have kinetic clubs at their schools, and I think one of them, I built their machine from scratch.
The course spans from Arcata to Ferndale and will take the competitors 3 days to traverse. Those wanting to witness this incredible spectacle can visit kineticgrandchampionship.com for the course map and best viewing options. As Memorial Day rolls around, the K-Mud community asks that you join us at the annual K-Mud Block Party. To share the details, K-Mud News got two instrumental mudders into the sound booth to share all the details with our listeners.
Hey, I'm Dorothy. I'm the membership coordinator at K-Mud.
And I'm Tess Dean, the merchant ticket booth.
And our board president.
Yes.
This year, K-Mud will be hosting their first ever community parade honoring veterans, which will kick off the annual celebration. The Block Party is an annual fundraiser in celebration of Redwood Community Radio, founded in 1987 right here in Southern Humboldt. This year, Redwood Community Radio is celebrating 37 years of people-powered radio. What birthday celebration would be complete without live music?
Oh, so then starting at 12 o'clock, the Garberville Town Band is going to be playing promptly at noon. They're going to be marching into the giant big top tent, which we just set up, and continuing to entertain as the memorial parade arrives at the block party.
And then we'll have Mountain King 707.
And Tales from Cowtown, a friendly family puppet show.
And that's going to be in the Kids Zone. The Kids Zone is going to be phenomenal. There's going to be so many things happening there, adding to this puppet show. Then Blue Rhythm Review, which is a Northern Humboldt party band that's going to make you dance.
Eli Fowler, who you might remember, Little Kid Lost.
And then Beth and Diego, you may know them from the Gypsy Tent at Summer Arts. They will be here in the Kids Zone as well, entertaining. Then Makenu, the best cumbia band in Humboldt.
Definitely a K-Mud favorite.
And our DJ Daniel is now part of Makenu. That's going to be wonderful to see him there.
Oh, great. And finally, at 7:30, just as it's getting dusk, Mama Grows Funk, backed by popular demand.
Yeah, we had them at the yacht party last year. If you were here, for sure you remember. We love them so much, we asked them to come back for our bigger party, which is this block party.
KEMA truly is people-powered radio, built, ran, and sustained by the communities it serves.
Come and meet your DJs. Maybe there are some voices you hear on the air and that you've never put a face to the voice. That's the opportunity to come and meet them. It is also our biggest fundraiser of the year. We count on our community to bring together all the money that is necessary for this radio station. This is the way to come and spend happy money that goes to K-Mud by having a good drink, good food.
Kick off your Memorial Day weekend right here with the Mud at 1144 Redway Drive tomorrow at noon. Sponsors of this annual community event include Coast Central Credit Union, Intense, Block and Tackle Designs, and Ridgeline Farms. Thank you for supporting People Powered Radio. That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Michael McCaskill, and thanks to our reporters, Matt LaFever, Serenity Wood, and Ray Hamill. Reporting from the studio in Redway, I'm Lisa Music.